to this church family. 1 week from today starts our fall gospel meeting. That'll be this next Sunday with David Watson, Sunday through Wednesday. If you've seen the flyer, he's got a lot of practical things he's going to be talking to us about, from grandparenting to social media. It's going to be a great week, and so make sure it's marked on your calendars next Sunday is when that meeting's going to take place. We as a congregation are looking at a theme this year the shepherds have cast for us. It's on the board. It's the theme of foundations, and it's really been fitting for us this year. Whatever you're building, whether if it's a house or a classroom wing or even your life, it all goes back to what are you building your foundation upon. The foundation is the most crucial element to a building project. And we as God's people, if we're going to be who He wants us to be, who He's called us to be, we're going to build our lives on the rock, on Jesus as our foundation. And that's what we've looked at this year. That if we start with God and His Word as our base for all of who we are and all of what we do as our foundation, and we listen to His words and we put it into action in our lives, that will build the focused heart, a strong individual Christian. God's Word will bring about the best in your life, the best marriages, the best parenting, the best homes, if I follow the book. Well, if we are doing that as a people, if we are striving to let these words guide our steps, direct our steps, a church, a local congregation is comprised of individuals. It's going to produce a functional, strong, active church. That's what we've been talking about. We are the church. It's not a building. It's a people. And so if we're each striving to be strong, this is going to be strong. This place will be strong. And ultimately, if a church is doing what God has called it to do and being who they are called to be, it'll result in a growing community. That is, the gospel can't be contained here. Who we are and what we're doing will burst from these walls. This community will see it and hear it, and they will want to be here. They'll be drawn in. And so this quarter, we've been talking a lot about the church, whether it's the design of the church, God's plan, His blueprint for the church, or the relationships. We talked about how family matters to God and it matters to us. You cannot be wrong with your brethren and right with God, and so our relationship with one another. And then this month, we spent some time talking about worship, the glory of God, and how a strong, functional church is one that spends great time, gives great emphasis to the glory of God, to worship. Well, I want today to wrap up a thought on worship and bridge into what we're going to look at in our final quarter of the year, and that's the growing community, about evangelism, and how we are going to be a church that embraces the mission of God, of taking the gospel into the world. We're going to embrace that in our prayers and in our words, and ultimately in the life that they see. I want to give a lesson today that I think will kind of bridge the two quarters we've been looking at by looking at a fantastic psalm found in Psalm 84, the Pilgrim's Worship Song. This psalm has a lot to do about worship, a lot about the glory of God and entering into His presence. But this psalm also paints us a picture of what evangelism really ought to look like. This psalm can be broken down into three sections. The first of which, verses 1 through 4, is a longing for God's presence found within the heart of the one who writes it. Verse 5 through 9 is the journey to God's presence, the journey from where they are to the very temple mound. And then verses 10 through 12, it ends with the glory, the incomparableness of God's presence. And then contained in each section, you'll find a blessing, kind of like the Beatitudes, blessed are. And so in the first section, you see the blessing of those who dwell in the house of the Lord. And then in verse 5, blessed is the man whose strength is in you and whose hearts are the highways to Zion. And then verse 12, blessed is the man who trusts in you. Each section containing a blessing. Got your Bibles open? Let's read it together. This is Psalm 84, beginning in verse 1. How lovely are your dwelling places, O Lord of hosts. My soul longed and even yearned for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh sing for joy to the living God. The bird also has found a house, and the swallows a nest for herself where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. How blessed are those who dwell in your house. They are ever praising you. How blessed is the man whose strength is in you, and whose heart are the highways to Zion. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring. The early rains also cover it with blessings. They go from strength to strength. Every one of them appears before God in Zion. O Lord, God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. Behold our shield, O God, and look upon the face of your anointed. for a day in your courts is better than 1,000 outside. I would rather stand at the threshold of the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord gives grace and glory. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, how blessed is the man who trusts in you. This psalm paints the picture, a beautiful picture of what it means to really long for the worship of God, to be in the presence of God. There's a thought here I think can get lost on us, and that is it all centers around the temple, being in the house of the Lord, if you saw that. And we don't really have that today. This building, this worship hall, as beautiful as it is and as great as it is, it's not at all the temple of the Old Testament. Not at all what it was supposed to be. You see, Jesus said in John 4, in that conversation with the woman at the well, she asked, he said, our fathers worshipped in this mountain. And you people say that in Jerusalem it is a place where men ought to worship. Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem shall you worship the Father. You worship that which you do not know. We worship that which we know. For salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers. Jesus makes it clear, under the new covenant, it's not about a specific place or a specific building. It's in the hearts of people. God's covenant people who will worship him wherever they are in spirit and truth. But we know that wasn't always the case. There was a time in the Old Testament that God had a central place of worship. A central place where at least three times a year, all of his people were expected to come and to assemble and to observe those festivals and to worship him. For a while, it was the tabernacle, the tent that was on the move from the wilderness all the way to the promised land. But then it became the temple, that grand and glorious building housed in Jerusalem, the capital of God's people. The temple, in many ways, represented the very presence of God. God was there, dwelt within the ark. And in many ways, the temple represented heaven itself. You see the outline of the temple. It had special rooms, your courtyard, your inner room where the priests would go in and they'd offer their worship. But then the special room where God's presence would come on the ark. It was told to Moses when he was building the tent-like structure, the tent-type pattern of this dwelling place. It says, according to the I'm going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it. He says, follow the pattern. That's what God said. Well, the Hebrew writer would pick that up. He says, they who serve a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things. Just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle. For see, he says, that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain. The writer says, the pattern that God gave Moses, the pattern to build a tabernacle and the temple, it was designed after heaven itself. In fact, he would say the same thing in chapter 9, verse 24. For Christ did not enter a holy place made with hands, a mere copy of the true one. No, he's into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Think of it, brethren. Do you remember all those details about the tabernacle, that tent? Do you remember the details about the temple? Do you remember one thing that appeared all throughout the construction of that? There was a lot of symbols of these cherubims. Remember that? And all these wings. And they had to construct it out of all these different pieces and elements of gold. Well, do you remember in Isaiah chapter 6? When Isaiah sees the presence of the Lord, who is there? All these angelic cherubim are there. The tabernacle and the temple were meant to represent the very presence of God itself, heaven itself. In fact, the ark, that special ark that housed those three special elements, that mercy seat to where God, in essence, sat upon. The ark was seen as the footstool of God. And so David would say, he rose to his feet and said, listen to me, my brethren and my people. I had intended to build a permanent house for the ark of the covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God. The ark was seen by the people of God, that God was enthroned, sitting on his throne in heaven, but the Ark of the Covenant was the footstool. He rests his feet upon it. Maybe that's why some of the Psalms would use language like this, that God is enthroned above the cherubim on the Ark. Now, no, God was not actually in the temple, as in an actual presence, because Solomon made it clear, God can't be contained. You can't have a house big enough, a dwelling place large enough to hold God. He's just too great, too vast. And yet God's people knew that when they came to the temple, that special place, that there was some sort of a special connection made between them and God. That when they went to this place, this temple, where that ark was, in a real sense, they are entering into a special divine relationship as they worship their Creator. And so you'll find psalmists that would say, "One thing I've asked from the Lord, that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in His temple. I want to be there where He is." That's what's going on with this psalm. And so when you read Psalm 84, that's what this writer, these sons of Korah, are talking about. The special relationship found in worshiping God here, in this place where God can be found. So let's break it down a little bit. Let's break down the psalm, because it starts with this longing for God's presence, a desire, more than anything, wanting to be there, wanting to be where God is. And that's found throughout the psalmist, right? "I was glad when they said to me, 'Let's go to the house of the Lord.'" Or looking backwards, as one psalmist would say, "These things I remember, and I pour out my soul within me. For I used to go along with the throng and lead them in procession to the house of God with a voice of joy and with thanksgiving." There it is. I used to do so. I used to lead God's people to the house. And when I did, oh, it was a great and a joyous thing. He talks in verse 3. It's a beautiful analogy. He says, "Look at the birds." Ever hear someone do that before? Maybe Jesus. "Look at the birds." He says, "Oh, the birds that find such comfort when they can find a house and they build a house, a nest, and they're able to dwell safely and securely." He says, "Even the birds who dwell or make nests near the temple, near your altars." The point he's making is this: there's not going to be anyone greater, anyone more blessed than the one who can dwell continually in the presence of God. You won't have to long for the presence of God, not when you're there all day long. Do you get the impression here that worship was a burden to this man? Do you get the impression that worship was a painful obligation? It's Sunday morning for him. Oh, it's Saturday morning. I got to go worship. It was a longing of his heart and of his soul. He anticipated the courts of God. And then you have this language in verse 5 of the pilgrimage. Unless you lived in Jerusalem, there were certain times in the year you would have to travel to Jerusalem in order to worship. And that's verses 9 or 10-ish. Because what happens is it's a language of those, God's people, his worshipers, who are leaving from their homes and going to the presence of God. And along the way, they make this painful, difficult, hard journey. Because it says, if you notice it in verse 6, they come across these places called Baca. Your version may just say the valleys of weeping. It's not meant to be found on the map. There's not an actual place called Baca. It's picturing, get it in your mind, because this is what he's talking about. Imagine a dry and desolate wasteland. Hasn't seen water in a long time. Does it remind you of Texas? Long, dry, desolate. Not a place you want to stay for long. But instead of getting in despair, instead of losing hope, instead of turning around and going home, they press on. They press through the valleys. They press through the wastelands. They're heading to the presence of God. They're heading to offer their worship to the King. In fact, not only are they going to worship, they're worshiping the whole way. There's a section in our Psalms from 120 to 134 that are called the Psalms of the Ascent. As they would climb that Jerusalem's hill, they're worshiping the whole way. One psalm is this one. This is what they're singing as they're going to Jerusalem. "Behold, bless the Lord, all servants of the Lord, who serve by night in the house of the Lord. Lift up your hands to the sanctuary and bless the Lord. May the Lord bless you from Zion, he who made heaven and earth." They're singing this. They're worshiping God all the way to worship. They never cease from worshiping. But you notice, though, they come to these wastelands on their way to Jerusalem. But what happens? I mean, it was a wasteland when they got there. It was pretty rough by the time they got there. What happens when they leave? They've blessed it. The dry and desolate wasteland now becomes a beautiful, lush valley. Whether it be that they, while there, are digging for trenches, finding a well, watering the ground around them, God himself is active and blessing by sending the rains. The point is this: wherever they go, they leave it better than how they found it. They bless the road they travel. And at the end there in verse 7, everyone makes it. There's not one who's left behind. How do they do this? How do they make it there? I wish, and I'm going to come back to this in a minute, put a peg. Look at verse 5. I think this is a verse to contemplate all week long. Will you look at the end of that? How blessed are the ones in whose hearts are the highways to Zion. Do you know what he's saying? Let me ask you a question. Do you remember the house you grew up in? Do you remember that? Your childhood home? Do you remember what it looked like? Maybe are you getting some smells? Yeah, smells. I have smells. I remember some smells. Let me ask you a question. If you can remember, some of you, this is a long way back, long time since you've been here. Do you remember how to get home? Do you remember it? Do you remember certain features? Like, do you remember the road to get there? Like, were there, like, distinct things in your mind you could pick up? Maybe houses along the way, and you always kind of remember it. Or trees, or signs. Do you remember the way home? You know why? It wasn't we sat down when we were 7 and said, I've got to memorize this right now, every detail. You know why it's in your heart? Because it's important to you. Because something valuable took place there. That's home. That's joy. That's family. The way home, the road home, were written in your heart because that's a place you long to be. Look at that in verse 5. How blessed are the ones in whose hearts are the ways, the highways to Zion. You don't have to tell them how to get to Jerusalem. That road, that pathway to God is written in their hearts. Isn't that beautiful? And then he talks about the glory. He offers, if you'll notice it in your text, in verse 8 and 9, a little interlude. Doesn't fit with the main thought of the psalm. He offers a prayer for the king. Obviously, if God's going to bless his people and bless his worship, you need to bless the king. But he gets back on point, and this is what he talks about. The weight. That's what glory is. The weight, the brilliance, the wealth, the importance, the incomparableness of the presence of God. And notice how he compares it. Two vast comparisons. One day with God, 1,000 days anywhere else. A simple overlooked job, a doorkeeper in the house of God, or I get to dwell in the tents of ease. Implication, I'm rich, I'm happy, I'm dwelling in the tents. And you see what he's saying? 1,000 years in the world. They don't compare with one day with God. Even the lowest overlooked position in the temple of God is greater than the king in the world. Do you hear that? A doorkeeper in the house of God is greater than the emperor of the world. Because look at verse 11. Do you see it? With God, there's guidance and there's protection. With God, there is grace, forgiveness abundant, and there's glory, weight, and importance. Because with God, every good thing you could possibly desire, because every good thing that you have came from him. Nothing compares to a day with God. Now, why bring this up? In fact, what does this have to do with worship? What does this have to do with our theme for the month? What does this have to do with evangelism? I've left a lot of questions so far. At least at face value, before even getting into all that, isn't that a beautiful psalm though? Is this not worth reading again and again, singing through? Here's the thing. This psalm, it's our song. This is our song because this is a picture of us. Do you remember what Peter calls us? We're pilgrims, sojourners, a people who are on a journey. Why? Well, because this is not our home, right? Paul said it. This ain't home. We sing that all the time. This world is not my home. This is not our citizenship. And so we are pilgrims heading to the real home, the real presence of God. And yet, what do? All along the way? Are we in the real presence of God? No, he's not here. He is enthroned in heaven. Yes, he's everywhere. And yes, he's among us today, but it's not as real as it will be one day when we see his face and we're in his dwelling place. And so we're heading there. We're going home. But all along the way, on this journey, we worship and we praise and we long for the day when we are home and we're in those courts and we're in that house. And a day that will never end. I want you to think about this then. If this is our song and this is what we're singing, I want you to see what this psalm calls us to do. Three quick thoughts for you. Ready? This psalm calls us, firstly, to build an anticipation for worship. That is the heart of this psalm. Look at it again in verse 2. Notice all of the person that is mentioned in verse 2. My soul has longed or yearned for the courts of the Lord. At the end of verse 2, my heart and my flesh. Look at that. My soul, my heart, my flesh. You hear what he's saying? Everything about this person absolutely desires to be with God. It is his greatest desire to be with him. And I will tell you, there is something precious about longing to worship God. Longing to be in the worship of God. Yes. Do we worship every day? Yeah, I do. Right? Prayer happens every day. We can sing to God every day. But there's something different about this day. There's something different about Sunday, isn't there? We're here. We're here with family. We're here with our family. We are here to eat and to drink and to share and to supper. There's something to be said about longing for this day. Longing for the family, corporate, together worship before God himself. Have you ever been the recipient of a forced action? Or maybe something happened and the parent says, I want you to go to Mr. Jordan and say you're sorry. I'm sorry. Ever had a child forced to say thank you to you or forced to sing happy birthday when you know they didn't want to? That doesn't feel really good, does it? Is it possible, do you think, to be here and to offer up what we might feel is forced songs, forced appreciations, forced thank yous to God? I mean, we're here duty-driven. I don't want to get punished. I don't want to go to the bad place. I don't want to get punished. And so I'm here, but, I mean, I'm singing my songs. And I'm bowing my head in worship. I'm bowing my head in prayer. I ate the Lord's Supper. I drank the fruit of the vine. But if you had to push me on it, I kind of feel like the kid who has to sit and visit with his grandparents rather than being with the kids at the park. I'm here, but you know, I really wish I was over there. I'm here. I am present in worship. I'm in the pew. I'm singing the songs. I'm bowing in prayer. I'm saying the right things. But though I'm present in body, I'm really not here. I'm wishing I were somewhere else. I'm a doorkeeper in the temple of God, wishing I were out dwelling in the tents of the world. Anticipation comes from things that are important to us, things that we value. Have you ever seen a new parent and the anticipation before that baby is born? Or maybe have you seen the groom moments before the bride comes down the door and everything starts and you see him bouncing on his heels and how white his face looks in anticipation. Or maybe it's a time, I love it, it's one of my favorites. I get to travel a lot through gospel meetings, and one of my favorite scenes is when you get off the airport and you're going through the terminal and you go to where the rest of the people are and there's someone just waiting for you. I love it when it's not me so I can see it. I mean, I love it when it's me too. I love it when it's my kids. But I love being able to step back and you see the signs, daddy or mommy, and they're just waiting and they're tiptoeing and they're trying to see. And finally they see them and out they come. It's the grand anticipation. They're here. They're here. Anticipation. Now here's the thing, our anticipation of this day of worship, it's not like an excitement in going to a trip. It's not like anticipating Disney World. You know why? We don't come here to get entertained. We're not here for the thrill of it all. We're not here just to get by, to check out, to zone out, to let my kids go to class for 45 minutes so I can exhaust myself for a minute or catch up from being exhausted. I'm not here to get a quick pick-me-up before a tough week. That's not what any of this is. Worship has much more substance to it than a quick pick-me-up. Much more reality or purpose to it than a thrill or an excitement of a fun vacation or a leisurely moment. Worship is a moment, a time of pure devotion. Because think of this. You might not have thought of it today. For 3 straight hours today, your mind has been on one purpose and one person, and that's God. When and the rest of your week will you have 3 hours just for God? when every song and every prayer and every word and every class is pointing you to one specific place. Because this is a time of real reflection. Real reflection. Oh, you might listen to podcasts. You might read some inspirational books. But when else are you going to have the truth of God given, read, and spoken right to your soul, to where you can listen and hear and reflect, to realign your priorities, to refocus your devotion to Christ? This is a time of complete giving. I'm not here, because we hear it all the time, I'm not here to give. I didn't get anything out of that. You're not here to get. You're here to give. You're here to offer. You're here to offer your praise, to offer your thanksgiving, to offer your admiration to God at the time of sharing with one another. Because when else are we like this? When else are we gathered as a family, this family, like this? You see, brethren, worship is about God. It's about seeing the King. It's about praising the divine, glorifying the Lamb. And for one moment, one special, incredible moment this week, He shares with you as you share with Him. Did you do that just now? When you ate and when you drank, you shared with your neighbor and you shared with your brethren as we collectively thought about the Lamb. But you realize when you eat and when you drink of the Lord's Supper, you are sharing with the Lord Himself. He shares with you. Nothing compares to a moment in the presence of God. In fact, look at verse 5. Answer some questions for me as we look at our text. Whatever it might be, does your job offer you enough strength to handle the worst of life storms that inevitably do come? Verse 11, does the wealth that you have, or you hope to have, or are gaining, hoping to gain and to have, will it be for you a shield to keep you safe when Satan comes and aims his arrows at you for your soul? Will your wealth keep you safe? Will it be a shield to your life? The friends and the loved ones around you, even godly parents in verse 11, are they wise enough and knowledgeable enough to be a sun for you in your moments of darkness, to give you the complete direction when you feel lost? The point of this psalm is there is nothing that compares to a moment with God. There is nothing that compares to the presence of God. And so what we see from this psalm is the absolute desire, the absolute necessity for the longing and the great anticipation of the presence of God. Do you know what anticipation looks like in worship? It's seen in our attitude. I love it. We're tired and we're weary. And we're sick, even disease-filled, and yet we come. And we say, I was glad to be here. It's seen in how we worship. Sung with passion. Prayed with fervor as if I was speaking those exact words. And everything that I was saying, God was listening to. I have a friend in Chattanooga, he changes for me. He was talking about prayer. And he said, sometimes I think when we talk about prayer, even corporate prayer, we imagine God in this big conference room with all these telephones, and He's getting all these calls, and He's getting all of them and answering real quick. He said, but that's not the way the Bible pictures prayer. It's not a God who's so overwhelmed with all the prayers of the world that He's just answering them as quick as He can to get them done. He says, imagine the chair, and imagine your King sitting on the chair, and it's just you and Him, and He's looking at you eye to eye, and He says, I can't wait. What do you have to say? Nothing's more important right now. Tell me what's on your heart. And that's prayer. And then we pause and we speak, and He listens. Anticipation will be seen in how we worship. It'll be seen in how we speak about this place, good brethren. I can't wait for Sunday. What'd you do this weekend? I was in the presence of God. I got to speak with my King, with my family, my real family, this weekend. It'll be seen in our interactions. And maybe I need to ask that question this morning. The way I treat my brethren, and am I a drive-through Christian? I'm here, I get what I need, and I'm gone. I'm gone. Got the Lord's Supper, got the sermon, I'm gone. Or am I the invite only? You're only allowed in if I invite you in. But if I don't know you, and I don't have a close connection to you, you don't like what I like, you don't like the Cowboys, whatever I'm into, I'll say, hey, how you doing? But that's it. I'm not going to get to know you. I'm not going to go deep. Invite only. Or maybe is it more reflective of the psalm? There's something great that unites you and me, and we may be very different in a lot of different ways. But I love you. I love you, and I want to get to know you and share this morning with you. I want to share my faith with you, and I want to share kindness with you. I want to share my burdens with you, hoping that you'll share your burdens with me, because we've come together to magnify the Lord. Anticipation for worship. How do you get this, brethren? How do you anticipate Sundays? How do you anticipate coming together as a family to worship God? Here it is. Remember? Remember where you're going. And I don't just mean 2828 West Kimball Road. Remember where you're going. This is just a stop, good brethren. Just a stop on our journey to the real presence of God. And that's really the second thing this psalm calls us to, and that is to bless the road you travel. They're going a lot of places. They're traveling from all sorts of locations, but they're traveling to the same destination. They're traveling home. But each place they come to, even if it's a desolate wasteland, they bless it and they leave it better than how they found it. I want you to think about this for a moment. I was thinking about this today. I was thinking about some of you and how this might be answered. I want you to imagine this. Imagine all the places that you will travel. In fact, all the places you will live on your journey from earth to home. How many cities you've lived in. How many countries you've lived in. How many local congregations you've been a part of, you've worked with, and worshiped with. But here's the thing, because some of you, I thought, you ain't never getting out of Dallas. This is going to be it for some of you. And for some of you, this might be the only local congregation you're a part of. So think of this with me. Imagine even here in Dallas, all the people, all the souls you'll get to interact with on your journey from earth to home. All the people that will come through these doors and be a member of this local congregation. Do you remember some who are no longer with us? All the people you get to meet and work with and love and worship with. All the people you get to go to school with or you work with on a day-to-day basis, Monday to Friday. All the people you get to be neighbors with. They come out and they come and they go. But all the people you get to meet living next door, literally right next door to them. All the people you get to see on a regular basis, those you buy things from, services and opportunities, those who cut your hair, those who work on your car. Think of this, because here's the reality. We're here talking about an actual dry, dusty dirt, but I want you to see what the psalmist is calling us to. You will inevitably, on your journey from earth to home, come upon some dry, desolate wastelands seen in the broken hearts of people all around you. What is the psalmist calling you to? Leave them better than how you found them. Be a blessing. You're not going to be here long. You're not going to be around these people long. In fact, your time with some people who are near you may be very short. And so as long as they are in your life, and as long as they are close to you, you bless them. And you leave them better than how you found them. Isn't that what Peter was talking about in that context about pilgrims? He says, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that the things which they slander you as evildoers, they may, on account of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation." You hear what he's saying? If you come across someone who's broken, offer healing. You come across someone who is full of despair, offer hope. You come across someone who is lost. They're so lost. Lost in who they are and where they're going. Point them to the way. You come across someone who's desperate. They're thirsty. Point them to the living water. Good brethren, beloved, you can be so many things in this life. You can be afraid. You can be, as we might say, introverted, shy. You can be kind of isolating to yourself, not really interested in the lives and the interests of other people. And it could be that when these things come and you meet some people that seem like dry, desolate wastelands and their heart and their lives seem to be real messy, that you look down and say, this is a mess. Someone needs to come and clean this up. But I'm just going. I'm going on. This is someone else's problem. I'm heaven bound, so I'm going to mind my business. I'm going to keep to myself, and I'm just going to keep on pressing towards home. You can do that. You can do that. Or you can choose to be brave, to be adventurous, to be interested in other people. You can, when no one else is, you can be kind. And you can be gracious and forgiving. You can be hopeful when it seems like no one else has any. You can be Jesus. You can point them to the way back home. Good brethren, this is evangelism. I'm going to come across some people in my lives who are broken. I'm going to come across some valleys that seem desolate. But like the psalmist, I'm going to leave these people, I'm going to leave these hearts better than how I found them. I will pray for them, and I will influence them. And you know what? It may not get better in my lifetime, but I'm going to break some ground. I'm going to sow some seeds. I'm going to water some of this dry dirt so that hopefully when I'm done, the next person will come along, and this will change in the future for this person and this soul. I love the words from the preacher of old. It says, I shall pass this way but once. Any good that I can do or any kindness I can show to any human being, let me do it now. Let me not defer nor neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. Do you realize that? You're not going to be here long. This isn't your final destination. We're going somewhere. And so while I'm here, and while I'm in this place, and while I'm with these people, I'm going to bless the ground I travel. I'm going to bless the road I walk. Now, here's a question. We're going to end here. You've listened so well. We're going to end here. End with me, okay? Why? Why do we bless the ground that we travel, the road we walk? Why do we anticipate worship? Why come with great anticipation to this day, this first day of the week? You ready? Because this psalm, if it calls us to anything, it calls us to bind heaven to our hearts. My plea to you this week, write it down on a note card and just think on this. This is it. This is your application. This is my plea to you. Write it down. Think on this and pray on this week. Ready? This phrase. Word it how you want to, but this is what he's saying. How blessed are those who in whose hearts are the highways home. In their hearts is a pathway home. Why? Why do we bless those around us? Why do we get our hands dirty with the lives of those who are around us? Why do we bless the road we walk? Because we remember where we're going. And because of how good God has been to me and how blessed the promise is of where we're going, I have a living hope that can't help but come out of me. Of course, I'm going to be kind and I'm going to be patient and gracious because I remember where I'm going. And whatever this is, this conflict between me and someone else, or the agitation of the frustration of the demands of this day, it's just been a moment. It's been a moment compared to where I'm going. And so I'm going to share this hope, and I'm going to talk to people about Jesus because I'm not keeping it to myself. Why do I bless the road I'm traveling? Because I want people to go to heaven too. Well, why do you anticipate worship? Why come with such longing to this day and this place? Because I remember where I'm going. And this, whether if you knew it or not, whether if you've realized it yet or not, good brethren, this is just a taste. Today is but a sweet foretaste of what really is to come. Do you know that? That's what makes Sunday so special. This is what it's going to be like. Family. The family who love you and who love God, surrounded together, but instead of the God in our mind, who we know is there, who we realize is present, instead we'll see him face to face on the throne, and we'll see the joy on his face as we sing, "Worthy is the Lamb." That's why this is so special, brethren. This is just a taste. There's a song we sang in Chattanooga that I love because that's what it says. Here's the words. Listen to it. Gracious Father, friend divine, consolation of the blessed, you have touched this day of mine with a foretaste of your rest. Though tomorrow care may come, trial arise, and grief ensue, now I thank you for the time that I have spent in joy with you. Should this hour of rest depart and the joy it brings me cease, I will bear it in my heart as a promise of your peace. When I strain beneath new woe or contend with future sin, from this moment I may know you will bless my life again. Father, though I cannot see how my path will end below, still I know you wait for me where my heart has longed to go. When my body cannot stand, take my spirit to your breast. With a father's gentle hands, bear my soul to Sabbath rest. This precious Sunday morning, a day that sometimes becomes so duty-driven, so empty of the heart it needs to have. Good brethren, it's just but a taste of what really is to come. Don't we sing that when all of God's singers get home? Brother D. Bowman grabbed me when he was here on Sunday morning. He said, there's two things I need to tell you. He said, you never forget where you came from, and you never forget where you're going. That meant a lot to me. But he could have said to any one of us, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget where you're going. What did Jesus say in Matthew 6, verse 21, brethren? For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Let me ask you a question this morning. Where are the pathways in your heart leading you to? Where are the highways of your heart pointing to? Can I tell you this? The joy and the glory of heaven is not heaven. It's not a place. I mean, it is a place, but it's not the place. It's not the throne. It's not the golden streets. The glory of an incredible place we can't fathom. The glory of heaven is not the fact that there's not going to be any more evil or pain or sin or suffering. And even as we long for it, the glory of heaven is not being reunited with people that we miss terribly and we miss greatly and we can't wait to be with them. The glory of heaven is one good thing, brethren. It's the Lamb. It's Jesus. It's the God who gave you breath and gave you life. It's the God who gave you every good thing that you love and enjoy. Your loved one right next to you now, your children that you have, everything that you are thankful for, that came from God. It's God who gave you his son. We ate that. We drank that. It's the Lamb who died for you. That's what heaven is about. He is what this is about. And wherever he is, that's where my heart longs to go. One of my favorite pictures is of the crown. You know, the New Testament writers talk about our hope, our victory like a crown. Paul calls it the crown of righteousness. James calls it the crown of life. Peter calls it the unfading crown of glory. Well, my favorite picture is this. Finally, in Revelation, we get a picture of heaven. All we've waited the entire Bible to see it. Finally, we have this incredible picture of heaven. And there are these righteous ones who have received the reward. They have the crown. But instead of looking at each other's crowns and boasting and placing it on so smug, the text says that these 24 elders, they fall down before him who is seated on the throne, and they worship him who lives forever and ever. They cast their crowns before the throne, saying, worthy are you, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power. For you created all things, and by your will they existed and were created. Can you see it? Everything that you've worked so hard for, and you finally receive that crown of life, only to kneel before the throne and to take that precious crown and to toss it back at the throne and say, no, Lord, you are my reward. You are my treasure. And wherever you are, that's where my heart longs to be. Because a moment with you is greater than a lifetime anywhere else. In his presence. Are you seeking the presence of God? Are you heaven bound? Are you drawing near to the throne? Where are you this morning? Have you come to this place today, this special morning? Have you come with a heavy heart? Have you come with burdens you need help bearing? Have you come with some stains, some sins that you need some cleansing and some forgiving from? Have you come in need of hope? Of someone to listen, of someone to hear you out, of someone to offer your needs and your cares before the throne in prayer? How have you come today? Because I want you to hear this. We're going to sing it just now. You've come today to the presence of God. And we're thankful you've done so. But if we can help you come to the presence of God, to get on your road and to be heaven bound, you've come at a good time. You need to come down here though. You need to let us help you. If you're hurting, if you need help, don't do it on your own. We can help you. We can help you today. And so if you're here and you need some help, we're going to sing right now. Come on forward right now as we stand and as we sing.